Hi, this is Alonzo Bowden. Welcome to episode 141 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? I know it's been a while. It's been about a week and a half, and that had to do with travel and other things, but also because how could I top the last podcast? If you haven't heard it, get it. It was 140. I did it with my buddy Owen, and it's the first time we had background noise of the producer laughing out loud. So that was a great one, and I thank Owen, and I promise you there will be more podcasts with guests in a few weeks. This week, I'm in Vegas. I'm working here. Can't do the podcast in studio with a guest, obviously. Next week, I'm going to Singapore and Hong Kong. Going to be a very exciting trip, fascinating, but obviously, I'm not flying any podcast guests to Hong Kong. I'm barely flying me to Hong Kong. It's going to be an exciting trip, but I ain't in it for the money. We'll just say that. But anyway, getting away from all that, I was definitely inspired by something I read to do this podcast right now, and I will get into that. There may be a few interruptions. As I said, I'm at a hotel in Vegas. Here's my thing, and I know these are first world problems, okay? They're not even problems. It's annoyances. First of all, valets. Does the valet have to readjust everything, or readjust, not readjust, does he have to adjust everything in my car to make himself comfortable to park it? And, you know, I hit this one on Twitter, I put it out there, and I got the responses. Apparently, I'm not the only one. Don't adjust my seat, just sit on the front of my seat. If a person is small and you move the seat back to drive it, move the seat forward again. Stop adjusting our car just once. I would love to know where the valet is parked so I could go to his car and move the seat and the mirrors and anything else adjustable and say, welcome to our world. The other thing is I stay in hotels more than I stay at home, and I can never time the room cleaning, right? Whenever I think, oh, they're going to come way too early in the morning, put up the do not disturb, I put it up and they don't come early in the morning. They come in the afternoon. Or they come. I hate when I'm out of the room for 5 hours and no one cleans the room, and then as soon as I get back, there they are. So I'm literally doing this podcast waiting for a knock at the door. But first world problems, I know. It's what I talk about, because what else am I going to talk about? More talk about this presidential election? It's been going on too long. We are all bored. The circus is headed to New York. They're we'll find out what New York values are. Hey, remember Cruz dropped that line? I still don't know what New York values are. I grew up in New York. I wonder, I probably have New York values if they include things like dealing with people from other countries, other cultures, other religions, and other colors, because we're all thrown together on the streets in New York. To me, that's not a bad thing. That's probably a New York value. I don't know, allowing women to have abortions, that's probably a New York value, and who knows what else. I am so tired of this, but I will say, and Trump is fading fast. Trump is disappearing, not from the news cycle, but it seems people are catching on and not voting for him, which is good for Cruz and scary for the rest of us, because I think Ted Cruz is scarier than Donald Trump. Donald Trump, he's a showman, he's a sideshow, blah, blah, blah. Ted Cruz is a mean, close-minded, horrible person. You know, starting with this view that God told me to be president, like whenever someone says that, hide the nuclear codes. Don't let, you know, you can't have that. And His anti-women stuff, he's the one who engineered the shutdown of the government, wasting $25 billion for absolutely nothing, a temper tantrum over health care. He's the one who thought that military exercises in the Southwest were part of Barack Obama's secret plot to apply martial law and take away the guns of everyone in Texas. I mean, this stuff, these would be the rants of a crazy man, okay? Not the new probable Republican nominee for president. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Anyway, listen, this election cycle has gone on too long. Bill Clinton's been shooting off his mouth. I'm going to get into that, and that's a damn shame. But I will say this. NASCAR has proven me right. Those who know my comedy know my rant about NASCAR, about, you know, and NASCAR's history of racism, whether it be the Confederate flags or what else. Well, and the CEO of NASCAR supporting Trump, that was another great move. Well, here you go. The Duck Dynasty guy, Paul, I think his name's, I don't know what the hell his name is, Robertson, you know, the guy who's the head of Duck Dynasty. He's come out with these religious anti-minority, anti-women rants before. Well, he was giving the invocation at a NASCAR race at Texas Motor Speedway, and he said that they need to pray to put a Jesus man in the White House. And he said, all right, Texas, we got here via Bibles and guns. Yeah, that's in the NASCAR race. That's the honorary official spokesman at the NASCAR race. So stop trying to deny it, NASCAR. Bibles, guns, Jesus in the White House. Yeah, okay. Okay, so the head guy, Robertson, the dad, supports Ted Cruz, and the son supports Donald Trump, along with the CEO of NASCAR. So listen, NASCAR people, don't come at me talking about how open-minded you are. Don't come at me talking about we have the wrong impression of you when we say it's a bunch of crazed redneck, it's a crazed redneck sport. It is. It is. Say, and I know your argument's going to be, well, basketball, that's just a nigger sport. Say it all you want, but it's not true. The NBA, basketball, is worldwide. There are plenty of Europeans, there are white people. You know, there's some of my best friends play in the NBA, right? Jeremy Lin, Asian. But more importantly, basketball and engages, encourages fans of, they don't have somebody up there saying, support this political person or support that religious person. They don't care. Just come to the game. Same thing in football. Football got a crime problem. I'll admit that. It bothers me. Too many criminals in football. But football does not embrace any sort of political hatred or racism like NASCAR does. Yeah, I use the word embrace because that's what they do. And that's why I say the code, some bitch, you know, well, I do. NASCAR. Where's it based? North Carolina. Do we need to talk about North Carolina's new transgender law, which is brilliantly being battled by entertainers? Again, something I'm going to get into later, but many entertainers refusing to perform in North Carolina. Latest one is Bruce Springsteen, the boss, born in the USA. I'm going to be doing a show in North Carolina. I'm going to be at the Dead Crow Comedy Club, and I love the club. Last time I did it, I was amazed at the support of NPR listeners. It was a very liberal show. I'm going to be there. Joel McHale just did a show. I read about that. And he wore a LBGT support t-shirt. So maybe I'll have to do something like that. I'm going to do the show. And I'm going to talk shit about North Carolina when I get there. Because if all you have to worry about is who's using what bathroom? Like I said, if I'm ever worried about transgender using the bathroom, my life is perfect. I've solved all my problems, including my valet issue. Another thing I read, and this is very interesting, and I absolutely believe it, there have been more Republican congressmen caught in bathroom scandals, literally in the bathroom, having some kind of weird sex scandal, and you've read about them all, whether it be the texting or the young boys or whatever the hell they're doing in the bathroom, masturbating. There have been more of them in trouble in bathrooms than transgender women, meaning men who have become women who use the ladies' room. Okay? So, NASCAR, some bitch. Getting back, sorry. Got off track a little bit. Oh, This, I love this one. Okay. Bill O'Reilly talking to Donald Trump about problems in the black community. This is the most ridiculous thing. This would be like me, I don't know, talking about the problems in Russian preschools. Because, you know, I'm right on top of that. And I'm connected to Russian preschools. This would be about me, I don't know, talking about the I can't even think of anything so utterly ridiculous. But, and we'll be glad to know this, and I will do my best to spread the word to the black community. And I hope anyone out there listening will get out there and help. Because, you know, Bill O'Reilly explained the problems that black youth are having while grilling. I love that, grilling, as if Donald Trump's ever going to get grilled on Fox News. While grilling Donald Trump on Monday evening about how he boosts employment for black youth, Bill O'Reilly interrupted to make the truly, and I'm just reading from the article, the bizarre claim that black people, and here's why you don't have jobs, black people are ill-educated and have tattoos on their foreheads. Now, if you Google forehead tattoo, you see a bunch of white prison inmates with Nazi tattoos. That's the first thing that comes up on Google. But no, this is why. See, black people, this is why you can't get jobs. Because you're ill-educated and you have all those tattoos on your forehead. Okay? I'm not even going to get into it. No. Fox News, fair and balanced. No racism over there. Nothing. No. Just black people have tattoos on their foreheads. It's amazing. It truly is amazing. I would like to say it's amazing that they're this out of touch with America, but it's amazing that how much of America they're in touch with. Do you understand? You understand what I'm saying? How much of America absolutely believes that statement? That's why black people are unemployed. Face tattoos, you know, you keep walking around. Maybe he was watching Mike Tyson. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But it's, I don't know if it's not even horrible. You know what I mean? It's not even horrible. It is a level of ignorance that is staggering and impossible to, I shouldn't say it's impossible to combat that level of ignorance, right? Because that implies giving up hope. And I know there should always be hope. But I don't know how you handle when the number one guy on the number one cable news network in the United States makes that statement to the number one Republican candidate for president, okay? That's three number ones. Number one cable news station, their number one guy, talks to the number one Republican candidate for president and says the reason young black people are unemployed is undereducated, which is true, but there's a lot of reasons for poor education, mainly money not being spent on schools, but that's another issue. But they have face tattoos. So how is this different than when they used to say black people had tails, when they used to say Jewish people had tails? Like, it hasn't changed a bit. They still harbor this belief, and belief that is widespread and supported, and NASCAR. I can't even make it funny. It's absolutely staggering. But just know this is what we're up against as a nation. This is what we're looking at. This is the prevailing view. Yeah, the prevailing view, because that is how many believe it. And getting to the other side, getting to the Democrats, this fight between Hillary and Bernie, this is the fight to make sure, in my opinion, this is once again the Democrats getting together and doing their best to lose from the front, doing their best to blow this election. So now we have, you're up against Ted Cruz, the guy who thinks that President Obama has a secret plot to collect all the guns in Texas, and whose idea is to shut down the government, and believes God or Jesus put him, you know, is putting him in office, versus Donald Trump, and I'm not even going to go into the list of what's wrong with him. So this is who the Democrats are up against. So what do? Let's fight each other. So now you have Bernie calling Hillary Clinton unqualified, and you have Hillary Clinton talking about Bernie having no real policies to back up his promises. And yeah, super delegates. What if the super delegates started fighting like the superheroes, right? You got Batman versus Superman, and Captain America and Iron Man are about to get into it. What if all the super delegates at the convention start battling each other? It's bad. It's bad for the party. It's a division that historically, when Democrats do this, it does not end well. Isn't that right, Mr. McGovern? Look it up, kids. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I still think, believe, and dare say, hope that Hillary Clinton is the next president of the United States. But I can't be sure. I'm not as sure now as I was 6 months ago. I'll tell you that. I am not as sure now as 6 months ago. I know a lot of Bernie supporters don't like me for picking Hillary Clinton over Bernie. I think she's more qualified. I think she has more experience. I've yet to see how Bernie will pay for his plans. I'm not saying his plans aren't good, because free college is a great idea. Single-payer medical care is a great idea. But what I'm saying is the United States will not go for it. People will not vote to have their taxes increased, even though it would make their lives better. The example, the healthcare issue, Obamacare, okay, which is still being demonized. I had somebody recently talk to me about how much their health insurance costs. Look, price of my health insurance went up. It's ridiculous. I am a relatively healthy guy who never goes to the doctor, except, you know, occasionally when I had an accident, or every 2 years I go for my checkup. My health insurance is $400 a month. I pay $400 a month to not go to the doctor. So don't tell me that I don't know. Yeah, health insurance is overpriced, but that doesn't have to do with the president. That has to do with insurance companies. And to all those people who think it's going to be cheaper if you can buy it in another state, would you please stop saying that ridiculous nonsense? Listen, I live in California along with, I don't even know what the population in California is. I know the LA area, we've got 10 million or 11 million people. Okay. Insurance is much cheaper in Nevada, a neighboring state that is smaller. Do you think the insurance companies in Nevada would just absorb 11 million people from LA with the increased health risks and existing problem or whatever else, and not raise their rates? And, you know, welcome to Nevada. We're going to give you the same cheap insurance we've been doing here. Yeah, that is so dumb that I can't understand it. But do they believe it? They absolutely believe it, because that's what the Republicans are selling. Just sell insurance across the board. Now, what do you think the insurance company would do? What do you think that Blue Cross or Health Net or Cigna or any major health provider would do if 11 million people from L.A. decided, okay, let's take 11 million people from L.A. decide to buy their health insurance here where I am in Las Vegas. Do you think they would, A, lower the rates of the 11 million people from Los Angeles, or B, raise the rates for the million people in Las Vegas? Well, that's a tough question, Alonzo. I'm going to go with B. Why? Because I'm smart enough to breathe. That's the level of education it takes to understand it. Even me, an undereducated black man who doesn't have a face tattoo yet, but I'm just waiting to pick the right one, Bill. I just want to pick the right one. Even I know what insurance companies would do in that situation. So we got that. Now, this is hurtful, annoying, and it falls under the same category. I put this in the same category, the same ignorant institutionalized racism that causes Bill O'Reilly to say that black people have face tattoos has shown up in Bill Clinton. And I've always supported Bill Clinton. I like Bill Clinton, and I know where this comes from, but it makes it no less horrible. And it's his response to protesters from Black Lives Matter, and it's the same old thing. It's the same narrative. It's the big, scary, criminal black man. And the extent to which white people believe this, and when I say believe it, I'm not saying it in the sense that it doesn't exist. I'm saying it in the sense that it is so ingrained in their psyche. Okay, so here's what happened. I'm going to try to condense this. Okay, well, I don't have where it happened, and I'm not going to read the whole article here, but I will say that this is Bill Clinton's response to a Black Lives Matter protester, okay? And let's see, it happened last week. Oh, in Philadelphia. Okay, so Black Lives Matter protesters. And now what this goes back to is Bill Clinton's policies in the 90s, his quote, get tough on crime policies that led to mass incarceration of black people that, you know, and so on. And so the dual laws of crack versus cocaine, where crack, you went to jail forever. Cocaine, you got a slap on the wrist because crack was a black drug, cocaine a white drug, and on and on and on. This is where this comes from. So, Bill Clinton he claims his crime bill led to a 25-year low in crime and a 33-year low in the murder rate. Now, if you read about this, there's a lot of reasons for this. And oddly enough, I want to say it was in Outliers, but it was in one of, oh man, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the economist, genius economist who wrote these books about society. It's the guy who wrote Outliers. I can get into it. I'm not going to pause and look for it. But he said the reason crime dropped in the 90s is because abortion increased in the 70s. See, once abortion was legalized, there were a lot of people who would have had babies in situations that stereotypically lead to crime, whether that situation be poverty, and don't just go right to inner city poverty because it's not as do it rural poverty also, but in that there'd be more people, fewer criminals were born, basically. That's what he said. Malcolm Gladwell, that's his name, Malcolm Gladwell. Fewer criminals were born in the 70s. That's why crime lowered in the 90s, okay? And that makes a lot of sense. But anyway, Bill Clinton's claiming that the Law Enforcement Act of 1994 and the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Act of 1996, which were acts that led to mass incarceration and which cut back on welfare benefits, he said that they caused a 25-year low in crime, 33-year low in murder rate. He got mad, and then he started ranting. So this is what he said, quote, "I don't know how you would characterize the gang leaders who got 13-year-old kids hopped on crack, sent them out in the street to murder other African-American children. Maybe you thought they were good citizens. You are defending the people who kill the lives you say matter. Tell the truth." So that's what Bill said. And it was, you know, again, the big black criminal, listen, it's the super predators, okay, that back in the 1990s, super predator. I would have been a super predator. Let me see, in the 90s, I was a little too old to be a super predator. I would have been a super predator in the 80s, not in the 90s. In the 90s, I was beyond my, I was past my super predator prime. This is what Bill said when he sort of apologized the next day, okay? He said that there were aspects of the 1994 crime bill that cannot be justified, and he regretted the way he engaged the protesters. He said, "You're living in a country where young African Americans think their number one threat now is from police officers." Well, they don't just think it, Bill. It is their number one threat. Black people are afraid of the police more and more. Make no mistake. I'm an old black guy. I'm not a young black guy. I'm afraid of the police, okay? But anyway, he says, quote, "You're living in a country where young African Americans think their number one threat now is from police officers. When I signed that crime bill, they knew that their number one threat was, they knew what their number one threat was. It was from gangs making money out of cocaine, taking teenage kids, huffing them up, giving them guns, and telling them to go kill other teenagers. First of all, Bill, crack don't huff anybody up. You lose weight on it. Crack kind of shrinks you. Stop it. Stop telling black people what the number one threat to black people is, okay? Stop it. It's not face tattoos, okay? And it's not huffing up on crack. It's things like institutional racism. It's the police. It's an incredibly high unemployment rate, and it is racism and discrimination and profiling. These are things. So even Bill Clinton, who I think was a great president and I think is a great man, but even he carries these beliefs that young black men are roaming around. Now, I'm not saying there are no gangs. I'm not being ridiculous. Yeah, there are gangs. Yeah, in the 90s, the Crips and Bloods were ridiculous. Listen, when I moved from New York to L.A., the first thing that struck me, I moved in 1980, and the first thing that struck me in the 80s was this gang violence thing in L.A., because this is when the Crips and the Bloods, it was crazy, and it hadn't reached a national level yet, and I was like, wow, why are these kids all shooting each other? In New York, when I did drugs, when I used to get high in New York, they didn't shoot out at drug spots. You know why? Because it was bad for business. They were businessmen. They're like, man, don't kill nobody in front of my drug spot. Nobody will come back to my dope spot. You know? And I'm not saying that's right, but I'm ashamed of you, Bill Clinton. I'm a supporter. I believe you. I still believe Hillary Clinton. I believe she'd learned from past mistakes. I think that this thinking of the 90s has been somewhat tempered. But is it gone? No, it's still there. Now what are we dealing with? Now we're dealing with the opiate epidemic. And even President Obama talked about this opiate epidemic. And you know why they call it an epidemic? Because it's affecting white people. Because that's why. That's why it's an epidemic, because it's affecting white people. They wouldn't care if black people, Latino people, whatever, were doing heroin. But because white people are going to the doctor, when they're getting these pills, they're getting their Oxycontin and their Vicodin and their other opiates, and they get hooked, and then they can't get them from the doctor anymore, and they start getting heroin in the streets, and they're overdosing, and they're dying. Now it's an epidemic. Now we're talking about drug treatment. I'm for drug treatment. I went to rehab 28 years ago. I've been sober. It absolutely changed my life. It made me who I am today. I am 1,000% for drug treatment. The double standard is what bothers me, but whatever it takes. But I'll tell you this, they won't be throwing the doctors who prescribe these opiates in jail the way they threw the big, bad dope dealers in jail. Okay, now I got a couple more things I want to talk about, but one of them, this was the article that inspired me to, like, made me want to do this podcast. This was written by Liz Mayer and out of the Daily Beast. And I love what she wrote, because basically what she said is, on either side of the campaign, okay, on the Republican side, you have Donald Trump. On the Democratic side, you have Bernie Sanders. You also, to some extent, have this general thing that get the government out of our lives and life will be better. But that's what people are saying. But here, geez, I'm sorry about that. Microphone just fell down. What the hell? This is why I need to be in a studio. Can't be trusted by myself. So Donald Trump supporters, they believe you can make America great again by making it Muslim-free, stopping immigration, screw Mexico, screw China, screw Japan economically, then, you know, sharing the spoils amongst the white populace, and their daily lives will be improved. Bernie's supporters think that we stop free trade, hammer the rich and industries to pay for Medicare for all, and heighten social spending, pay for college, everything will be wonderful and rainbows and as my friend Matt Kazam says, blowjobs and chocolate for everybody. But here's the thing. This is the interesting thing that she brings up about this. These people say that there should be no government, yet they expect the government to make the life their life better. Okay, you have these conservatives that want to go back to 1950, right, when there were women knew their place. There were no minorities. There were just black people. And them niggers damn sure knew where they belonged. And there were no Latinos or Muslims, and there was no other religion and blah, blah, blah. Okay, and then you have the other side, which would love socialism, have the government pay for everything and take care of everything. But notice, on both sides, and this is the point she's making, people are looking to the government to fix it. Isn't that interesting? These people claim that they don't want government, but they're asking the government to fix everything, right? The Republican side is asking the government to change everything, move it backwards, and keep people out. Keep the immigrants out, keep the Muslims out, block off Mexico, do away with any civil rights advances, you know, go back to voter restriction, ban abortion, et cetera. But they're asking the government to do all of this. The left wing, the extreme left, the socialist left is saying, have the government pay for health care, have the government pay for education, you know, college education, and higher taxes, et cetera. The government would divide it. Isn't it interesting that I'm a radical and I want change and I want that and I want the government to do it? Yeah. So what this woman, and again, look for Liz Mayer, and the article's called Donald and Bernie Don't Have the Answers, We Do, and it's from the Daily Beast, okay, and I love this article. She said, if you want to make these changes, okay, I'll read this from the article. The bottom line is the government isn't going to fix your messed up family life. It's not going to keep your kids from disappearing into a world of violent video games, cyberbullying, and unwise photo sharing. It's not going to stop your high school kid from trying the latest drug. It might make your health care more manageable, but if you suffer from chronic depression, it can't guarantee more than simply paying you or paying for a better treatment. It can't get you off heroin. It can't keep you from drowning your sorrows in a six-pack. It can't substitute for friends and neighbors, et cetera, et cetera. See, here's the thing. And this is what her point is. And I will say I agree with this point, although I don't participate. She says, if you want to change things, go back to community. Go back to knowing your neighbors. You know why? Because if you know your neighbors, okay, if you know your neighbors, if you say hello to them, if you talk to them, then you might find out that your neighbor, who's the Muslim, likes the same football team as you. You might find out that your neighbors, who are two gay parents raising a kid, really care about the quality of the school in the neighborhood. You may find out that you have more in common with these people than differences. When they talk about America and Americans, that was the thing about Americans. And when we talk about, I'm not even going to use that Donald Trump's quote, but when you talk about the America that used to be this fantasy of a perfect America, one thing that people had in common were common goals and the common good. So if you find out that your kids are having the same problem as his kids, even though he's different than you, if you find out you like the same activity as her, say you're into, I don't know, say you like mountain biking and she likes mountain biking. Now, you may be different religions, but both of you want a park to ride your mountain bike in. You see, whatever. The point being that it's not up to the government. The government isn't going to make your school better, okay? The government isn't going to solve your healthcare problem or, more importantly, your need to solve everything, better living through chemistry. It's not going to solve your need for a drug to deal with every feeling, okay? The government The government's good at really big problems. That's what I think the government does. I don't think government's really good at really small problems. Now, the reason I say I'm not involved in this, I don't have a family. I am not a social interactive person. I'll tell you why. I don't know my neighbors, and I don't care. I know one of my neighbors, and the only reason I know him is because he's a pain in the ass. So everyone knows him because he blocks the alley where we go into our garages when he parks his car. But, here's one. Marriage, okay? Well, marriage is a big issue, right? You got to have the right marriage, not the wrong marriage. You can't let the gays get married, blah, blah, blah. You know what marriage does? Marriage provides security. Marriage provides financial security. Marriage provides social, and when I don't mean social security in the sense of money, I mean like making the kids feel safe, et cetera, et cetera. You know what? That the government's not going to make that happen. The government's not going to stop you from getting a divorce any more so than the government's going to make you stay in a bad or abusive marriage. That's up to the individual. Now, if people talked more, interacted more, if we were just nicer, maybe some married people would be happier and would stay married. Maybe people would talk about their problems and find out they're not the only one. Maybe people who are in a bad situation would feel no stigma in getting out of the situation. But maybe people who are having a rough time would stay in. You see, it's the actions of people. It's a simple action of putting down the phone and talking to somebody. When I say putting down the phone, I mean not texting. But look them in the eye and talk to them. Do I text? Yes. Of course I text. I text people all the time. It's what I do. But I try to not do it all the time. Stop. Experience life. You know, I'm not some new age guy. People who know me know that. I hate Priuses. Yeah, I said it out loud. I hate Priuses. I'm not that new age guy. But maybe this article makes so much sense. Get involved in your community. Community involvement is on the decline. Switch into the virtual world, right? You know what community involvement is now? Clicking like, and maybe you give a dollar through a charitable campaign. But what if you actually interacted with people? What if churches, rather than mega churches telling you who you should marry or whatever? What if they did like old school food drives and actually delivered the food? Listen, there was a charity I used to be a part of. It was fantastic. We would get Santa letters. We would get letters that kids wrote to Santa. We'd go to the post office and we'd get them. And we'd go out and buy the gifts the kids asked for and we would drop them at the kids' homes. And you know why they had to stop that? Because they were afraid of getting sued because a pedophile would find out where a kid lives. You see, but if we were involved in community involvement, if there was charity, sure, it could happen. I'm not saying it could never happen, but maybe we wouldn't be so damn scared of it. So Nirvana, I don't know. I'm not getting into what people should do, how to make it perfect and stuff like that. I'm saying that the government's not going to fix it. More government isn't going to fix it. Less government isn't going to fix it. People are going to fix it. Interaction's going to fix it. And that's what's going to change if you want things to change. Maybe they won't. Maybe we will all end up on our own in a virtual world communicating via text message, which may not be a bad thing. We'll leave each other alone. So it was a great article. She talks about humans being a social species that interaction sometimes make us feel bad, but on the whole, we depend on it. We need it for a happy, healthy, functional life. The hell do I know about a happy, healthy, functional life? We need interaction amongst humans, and it is something we have definitely lost unless we're killing each other. We do tend to interact then. You probably heard about this. Will Smith, not the actor, but the football player from the New Orleans Saints, got shot in a road rage incident. More's coming out, but apparently what happened was he bumped into another guy's car, drove, and again, the story's evolving, so who knows, but bumped into a car, drove off. The other guy bumped into his car. They got out. Words were exchanged. The other guy shot and killed Will Smith. That's how we interact as people. finally, oh, two things. One, the NYPD is going to crush these motorcycles to crack down on knuckleheads. They've been seizing bikes. You've seen the stunters in the street. Look, I love motorcycles. Guys, you got to stop doing this. If any of you are listening, stop doing wheelies. Stop taking over the streets. You can't do it. What's New York doing? They're seizing the bikes and crushing them. I remember when I was a kid, New York cops would take your mini bike if you were riding your mini bike on the street. Now they're doing it to motorcycles. Why does this suck? Because a lot of people ride sport bikes and ride bikes who aren't knuckleheads, but they're still going to get hassled by the police. So anyone out there riding, stop it, okay? If I could wheelie, maybe I would. I can't. I have no wheelie talent. But I do know professional stunt riders, and they don't do it on the freeway. And they don't gang up and take over a road. We got to stop doing that kind of stuff. Or you're going to watch your bike get crushed because you are a knucklehead. The final thing, and this just proves I'm not the only one, American Airlines, the worst airline in the sky, the airline that treats you like cattle. A couple of mistakes this week. First of all, I don't fly American to Miami. Really don't, because you know something? My Miami to Bermuda flight was a flight that I got downgraded on. Maybe it's just American Airlines in Miami. There's a problem. The lead singer of the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur, U-Y-G-U-R. I am not going to try to pronounce that man's name. I know I will ruin it. But anyway, he was removed from an American Airlines flight. See, the flight was delayed for 4 hours, and he had the nerve, the absolute nerve, to get frustrated and angry. So he was tweeting about it. And then finally, the pilot didn't feel comfortable with him on the plane and had him removed. So he tweeted that American Airlines just kicked me off a flight to Miami because I complained about the flight being delayed for 4 hours, never got on a plane. And here, and I'll join you on this one, if you book a flight with American, they will ruin your day, ruin your plans, then rob you. They say they won't give me my money back. Yes, sir, I can vouch for that. They will not give you your money back. They will give you a voucher that is all but useless. Another woman had a major meltdown in LaGuardia. Imagine, guess what airline she was on? American. Yeah, she was on American. Guess what happened? Flight delayed for 12 hours, which caused her and her kids to miss their Disney cruise. Where was the flight headed? Miami? Well, I'll be damned. Good for you, American. If you may be shit, but you are consistent. I hate wrapping up on a negative note, but that's all I got. Oh, I was going to mention North Carolina. I mentioned it a little bit, but people are not going to North Carolina, led by the boss and numerous other acts. And the interesting thing, the sports teams are not following. They're threatening, but the NBA has not removed the All-Star game from North Carolina, nor will they move the Super Bowl from Georgia and these other places that are threatening these discriminatory anti-gay, anti-transgender laws. Again, we are so moving backwards. I hate doing the same thing every damn podcast. This is why my podcasts are sporadic. I'm sorry, because some of you enjoy them, and I love and appreciate when you guys come up to me at shows and say, we listen to your podcast. I do. I honestly appreciate that. This isn't funny. Sorry, this one isn't funny. A couple of jokes. It's not funny. It's not like when me and Owen, damn, that one was funny. If you need funny, go back and listen to episode 140 again, and I promise to match that in the month of May. I'm going to do a lot more. I'm going to be at home in L.A. I'm going to do a lot more live ones. But anyway, the same old things. Racism, gender discrimination, a ridiculous, non-issue-driven presidential election. It's the same damn thing. I am sorry for bringing it to you like that. At least we did get to pick on American Airlines. I'm at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand all this week up until April 16th. And April 28th and 29th, I will be back in the United States at the Dead Crow Comedy Club. Where? In Wilmington, North Carolina. We're going to have some fun down there. In between that, Singapore and Hong Kong. Thanks for listening. You probably won't make those shows. This is Alonzo asking who's paying attention and appreciating the fact it's you.